Next up, fuck Adrian Lama. That fucking snitch.
But, alright, guys. Peace. Thank you very much. We're Hack Miami.
Steve Christie, and I'm sitting here with Michael Darkman Scott and Ryan Weber, the creators of the esteemed lightsaber combat videos on YouTube. You might have seen them before, Ryan vs. Darkman and Ryan vs. Darkman 2.
Electric Boogaloo, yeah.
I didn't realize you had sequel names.
Yes.
RVD3, the Dorkening. And we're going to spend about an hour here talking to you on your while you enjoy your continental breakfast. We hope it's continental.
We hope it's breakfast.
It could be anything.
We don't know what time it is.
This convention could go crazy last night. And talk to you a little bit about visual effects and the process by which you can make a short visual effects-heavy movie. And I guess we should sort of start by explaining where you guys come from and why you made these things and what they are for people that aren't familiar. First, introduce yourselves. Ryan Weber?
Absolutely. Hello. My name is, in fact, Ryan Weber, and I have been casually interested in visual effects basically my whole life, and got into it personally probably around 7 or 10 years old or something like that, and then got really into it, did a lot personally, and then eventually we did Ryan versus Dorkman, the first, for a lightsaber choreography competition on a place called TheForce.net's Fan Films Forum, and yeah, so it was just this the competition to see who could make the coolest laser sword fight, and we did a pretty good job, and that was actually the first time we met Mr. Michael Scott here.
And that's where you met Michael? How yes. did you get into this, and what's your... your story.
You don't have to talk that fast, man.
Oh yeah, we got to fill time.
I've always been interested in movies and visual effects and stuff like that, and likewise. And so, I mean, you basically said all the pertinent info just then.
I blazed through it a little fast.
Yeah, got interested in it, and when the technology started to become, you know, you didn't have to spend $100,000 on a turnkey flame system to do special effects and stuff like that, then I became more actively interested in, like, oh, hey, this is something that, you know, I could do.
Mm-hmm. That everyone can do.
That everyone can do, exactly. But I didn't care about them. I just wanted to do it myself.
Exactly. yes.
But... So started learning that, and eventually met up or connected with you, and then made the first Ryan vs. Dorkman, and then.
So let's talk a little bit about that to the people that have no idea how deep the esoteric trench of Star Wars fandom goes.
Yes,
this is barely scratching the surface of
this ain't the Marianas Trench yet. This is still coastline Star Wars fandom. You guys both participated
on the continental shelf still.
An online message board for Star Wars fan films.
Yes.
So parodies of Star Wars and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
In the early 2000s before YouTube.
Yeah.
Am I still correct?
Yes. That's right, yeah.
And you got together having not met, knowing each other only from the internet, which right off the bat...
Which now is commonplace.
Yeah, that's not actually that weird anymore. Like we say that now, but a lot of people listening to this are probably like, yeah, what's weird about that? Like, all
in
my
2002,
friends come from
a
the
lot
internet.
Of things are weird about that.
Yeah.
And then you got together and bashed aluminum rods together and make a lightsaber fight? And that's... Was there any more... I mean, how did you plan to make a lightsaber fight together in the first place if you had never met each other before?
Well, there's kind of a whole backstory there as far as... And by the way, we should probably throw out, since you are listening to this and probably on a computer, if you have no idea what the hell we're talking about, you may want to check out, go to YouTube and search for Ryan vs. Dorkman, or simply RVD.
Or go to RyanVsDorkman.com.
Or go to RyanVsDorkman.
Which we still have, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
We linked
VS Dorkman. RyanVsDorkman.com. Yes. And
that will assuredly give you the right video.
Yeah.
So how did you guys hook up with each other and put together a lightsaber fight, having only known each other on the sex network?
Yes,
as it were.
Right. Well, yes, we were both sort of prominent personalities on this little forum of ours. So, you know, we were already nerd celebrities at that point, I suppose. And actually rivals. We really didn't like each other that much beforehand, to be quite honest with you. And so what was funny about it was that we thought, oh, you know, we'll... You know, we'd gotten along a little bit better, sort of personally. We were, you know, chatting online and stuff like that. But people online still thought we just hated the crap out of each other. And so what we decided to do was, for this contest coming up, hey, we should actually, like, really fight each other in real life for the video. That would be cool, because all these nerds would care, and it would be funny. And it'd be like a death match between...
It's amazing how many internet projects start out that way. Mm. Some guys will care.
Yes. Yeah, not many.
Will care.
We made it for a very few select, internet geeks.
Yeah, just a couple dozen at most.
Yeah,
quite frankly.
And so the whole point was, hey, look, those two guys who are, you know, the people from that forum that we go to are fighting each other, and isn't that funny? And so the whole point of it, as well as you watch it, you know, one of the criticisms that we get is like, hey, why aren't you doing like costumes and like sets and stuff? And it's like, well, the point was not to make a scene from the expanded universe of Star Wars here. The point is that we're just ourselves. We're just two guys, you know, nerdy dudes who are fighting with sabers, and hey, isn't that cool? And aren't they doing a good job? And do the effects look nice?
Yeah. Although if you watch the video, I don't generally dress that way. He actually wears
he's much
like,
more classy.
He
I actually do wear.
He actually went with the concept of
which is to parody
dressed as
ourselves.
Himself. Whereas yeah. I was like, this will look much cooler. Like,
and it does.
You were so right.
I put a bunch of layers on and stuff so that it would like. Move when I spun around and stuff like that.
So this was for a contest. Good. How did it do in the contest?
We won.
Woo!
Yay.
My gosh.
We got all 12 votes. No.
Sweet.
Yeah. So it was actually us and what tends to another video that tends to come up these days.
Yeah. That you may have heard of even if you haven't heard of us.
Yeah, called Art of the Saber. Although they started calling it a few other things.
Yeah, it showed up on lists lately with different titles.
Yeah, I've heard
right?
it being called Way of the Saber and stuff like that. But anyway, it was us versus Art of the Saber, and we were first, and they were second in that particular.
If you're trying to pull that out of the dusty corners of your mind, it's the two Asian fellows. One guy, or both of them wearing sunglasses, kind of matrixy.
One has a red saber. One has a purple saber.
Yeah, he's got a double bladed red saber, and they are very martial arts.
It's very kung fu.
Yeah, it's cool. It's good stuff.
All the way down to being sped up.
So between you first two, you know, the guys that came in first and second in the contest, and now you're all famous. Did that happen immediately? Loaded question. Did that just happen the day after you released it in 2002?
Absolutely not.
No.
I mean,
although it did get around a little bit even before. I mean, it really took off when YouTube happened. But even
before
3 years
I mean,
later.
in the days before YouTube, if you can remember back then, how it was to try to, number one, get a video hosted online. It's like you needed to find someone who would host your video file that you might take a day to download on your modem.
Right.
You know, but that was probably
and
a little
sure
before
sure as shit weren't going to do it for free.
Oh, my. Well, we did because we won this contest and we got in on this very elite page
the
of videos that
net,
they hosted, which, as far as I understand, is still there.
Yeah,
the pages are all still there, yeah.
Yeah.
But I've heard, my father teaches at a university out here, and he's met a number of grad students who were in college at the time and talked about how they're, you know, they have their like in school networks and stuff like that, and like his assistant knew who we were because it had been I think it was Penn State or whatever, but on the server at Penn State or wherever
they were getting it on LimeWire.
It was like everyone had seen it there, and like I remember even when I was still at school, there was a friend of mine in the dorm, like someone, because he was like an RA in the dorm, and someone came up to him at the cafeteria. They're like, dude, that guy from the lightsaber video, like, I think he goes here because I saw him in the cafeteria. He's like, yeah, he lives on my floor. So, so it was getting around even before YouTube made it easy.
It kind of went viral before.
Yeah, before that was easy.
Yeah, exactly.
Punk rock little short film. Did you, put it on YouTube yourself, or did someone else do that, and then now they're taking all the hits away from you?
Well, yeah. I mean, the one that...
were you guys early... you're as digital filmmakers and visual effects guys that have to put videos up on occasion, were you instantly on board with YouTube, or did it take a little while? You're like, screw YouTube.
I didn't know about it for a while. I mean, everyone kind of discovered YouTube in their own time, I think, because it was sort of around... I mean, it was one of those things that you just suddenly became aware of. Oh, my God! Now I get what YouTube is now.
Yeah.
And like, holy shit, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And so... we were not the first, because when you go to RyanVsDarkman.com or you find the one with the most hits on YouTube is not hosted by us. It's hosted by a guy named Maniac Mike.
Yeah.
His username. I assume that's not his actual name on his driver's license.
That'd be interesting, though.
Yeah,
you never know.
That would make him an interesting fellow, I imagine.
Yeah.
So
I'm gonna name my kid Maniac. So I'm gonna do. Penn Jillette named his daughter. Her middle name is Crime Fighter.
Crime Fighter, yeah.
Apparently,
Moxie Crime Fighter. I think it is.
Moxie Crime Fighter Jillette. That's her legal name. Her middle name.
My kid's middle name would be Danger.
That's apparently yes. Telling cops that their child's middle name is Crime Fighter has apparently gotten his wife out of a lot of speeding tickets.
Oh, cool.
That's none of my business, but he put it on his Twitter, so I assume it's public knowledge.
So I would imagine by the time that YouTube came around, and with it comes the advent of knowing how many people were watching your video, and from later on, where the
link is
coming from.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the first time you have an opportunity to kind of go, wow, this is really a thing. I've heard that this guy said he'd seen my video one time when I was at Taco Bell, and then this guy said, I saw your lightsaber fight, but you don't have a way of tracking it until all of a sudden the YouTube members are there, and you're like... My God, there's 5 million views on this.
Right, and I think it was. I think it also was a very much underground thing. Like we were talking about being passed around, you know, on people burning each other's CDs and stuff.
I saw you on a PSP.
Right.
Remember those?
Whereas
it was like 5 whole years ago. I don't remember that console at all.
Whereas, they brought back some good PSP ads. Like, they used to... The ads were just baffling for that thing. Like, with the squirrel, like, it's a nut you can play with outside and that stuff. Like,
I remember those commercials.
What was that? I don't understand. But now they actually have a good... PSP campaign going
maybe
on.
Maybe they fired them and got somebody else.
Yeah, I hope.
Anyway, it went viral, all that stuff.
Anyway,
for YouTube.
But then YouTube, it really became a thing with YouTube, and not just when it was on YouTube, because lots of stuff is on YouTube, although it was early days of YouTube, so not, you know, they weren't uploading.
You were like the ninth billionth.
Yeah, exactly. But what benefited us was that we got... featured on the front page of YouTube when people were just discovering YouTube, and the front page was a big deal.
We were featured in a lot of places as well, even before that. I mean, one of our big huge surges came from like E-Bomb's world,
right?
I remember
right.
them.
Posted us.
That's right.
Those are the guys that ripped off the whole internet, right?
Yes, they did,
including you guys.
Yeah.
All right, you're defendants in the claim that E-Bomb's world is completely ripping people off all the time.
Yeah. But, oh well.
I'm
imagining you guys, your opinion of it is just, hey, it's views, right?
Yeah, I mean, at that point, and I mean, always, I mean, we're not really...
Exactly.
I mean, if we really cared, Maniac Mike would not be the one hosting it.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
sure.
You know.
Well, it goes back into fan films, the fan films community, about how for years and years and years, people have been making fan films, like, really been making fan films in this modern third wave of fan filmery since, like, the late 90s, like, with Troops and movies like that. But they've been doing it since the 70s with Hardware Wars and stuff, and all this time it's been an underground thing at conventions, and it was always the case that you could always buy a copy of that fan film at the convention, and there are guys that have made fan films, or have had fan films that they've made out there for a long time that get really upset when people are selling and buying their stuff. But that's a whole, you know, 25,000 digital generations ago.
Right.
At this point, everything gets traded all the time. And you're helpless to stop it unless you take it entirely off the air. And then what good is that doing?
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is just sort of getting it out there and letting people see it. And back, you know, back before YouTube and all that stuff like that, that was the only way you could do it. But, I mean, there's also that weird sort of niche of, I don't know what, where people will take fan films and then sell DVDs of them and make profit from it, which is very weird. Because the whole rule is... And this is another question that we get a lot. It's like, how can you make something like that? And then, well, in the case of RVD2, we have a DVD that we sell that we can get into later. But, you know, and they say, how can you legally do this? How come they're not taking down your videos and stuff? And what's cool about Lucasfilm is that they are totally cool with everyone doing this wisely, you know. They're totally cool with it as long as no one profits from it. As long as you're not making money from their, you know, intellectual property, their characters, their, you know, imagery and all that kind of stuff. And so for folks like us, that's really great. And it's great for them, too, because really that only helps to promote their whole little universe of Star Wars.
Right. And, I mean, the people who put those DVDs together and sell them at conventions, they're not the people who made them, so they don't care if the maker gets in trouble.
Right.
They're just
like
they're selling it for $5 and it costs them nothing to make it, so why would they care? But I mean for us, you know, for like RVD and stuff like that, it's like, you know, with E-Bombs World and stuff, it's we said before, we made it for like 2, maybe 3 dozen people.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's all we ever expected to come of it. We're like that we're gonna put that there, and that's
Guys will think it's really funny.
Yeah, those guys
think we're all the coolest guys in the whole world because we made a good lightsaber fight, and then we'll go
Then we'll close that chapter of our lives and move on to other things.
That's what George Lucas thought too.
Yeah, so I guess that's
true. A few years later, you've had this video pinging around the internet, being passed around Penn State like so many STDs.
How many views does RVD have now? The original.
I think it's around 5 million. It may be creeping up towards 6.
But that's just
I haven't checked it in a while.
And that's on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. That's just on YouTube. 70 other places. Yeah.
And that's just on YouTube, the official one.
Because it's reposted many, many times. Yeah. If you were to add those up, it would be even bigger. Wow. And then
if you added them up, I bet it'd be a good at least 25 million views for well, not just YouTube, but all the
everything else. Yeah.
So when you sit back and start to realize that you're a project for 24 guys is now being seen by at least 20 million sets of eyes, at which point do you go, maybe we should do some more of these? I think this is working, and we have to recognize the fact that it's no longer for 24 dudes.
Mm-hmm.
Had you always planned on doing RVD2?
No, not really. I don't think so.
Yeah, we did. Well, we didn't. I mean, it was just a thing where we're like, yeah, we should do another one sometime.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah,
it's a, you know, we didn't. I guess it's fair to say we didn't really plan it, but we were just like, yeah, we totally should. Yeah, we will. I just, you know, whatever. Because those couple dozen people will still be there.
Yeah, we
get around to it.
We kind of seized the opportunity when it started to. It was YouTube specifically that really blew up, and that's when we really noticed the numbers, and we're like, Jesus, people are really watching this. People are really into it.
Yeah.
The other thing too is we were getting a lot of email and all the comments and stuff. It was very, very positive, overwhelmingly.
Yeah.
And so people, it's not just that a lot of people saw it, but a lot of people really, really liked it, and were telling us you should do another one.
Yeah.
You know, and so we were getting kind of bombarded with that in a way, and said,
your
all
convictions
right, well,
are nothing.
You know,
it's not like we had decided we're never gonna do. You know, no, we're done here. It's just it wasn't something that we had been like, oh yeah, we got to do this. It was like, yeah, eventually we'll get around to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're like, oh well, it should probably be now.
The time is now.
If we're gonna do it, we're gonna do it now.
And the other thing too, the motivation between doing another one was largely that it had been 4 years. Was it 4 years or?
It was 3 years since it had come out
when we started.
But it was essentially 4 years from one to the other. Yeah,
and in that time, you know, it's like we were looking back at it. And we're like, wow, you know, if we really, you know, put a lot of effort into it, we could do way, way better. And you know, if people like this one that much, I think we could make something way cooler.
Now the traditional thinking is, you're on iffy, quickly crackling thin ice when you go to say, I'm going to make a sequel to whatever I made. And this is in Hollywood. This is with, you know, a production crew and writers and the whole, you know, quality assurance, LOL, bit. How do you come up and say, all right, I don't know exactly what the hell just happened, but my little video has become a viral hit and I have to make another one and hopefully have the same response. What thoughts go through your mind when you're trying to piece together how to not, I mean, it's a different kind of thing. It's not like you're grabbing at the fame you already have, but more like you do have to catch lightning in the bottle again. Otherwise, it kind of, it's like when the Numa Numa guy made his second video. It's
right.
Like, uh-huh. Well, that's just clever as hell, Gary.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what thoughts go through your mind when you're trying to figure out, all right, how do I make RVD2?
Well, it's tricky because it's like, on the one hand, what we did last time worked. You know, so yeah. We're like, okay, that worked. So let's not overthink this. We're not getting a lot of, you know, the very few what you might call criticisms we received were things that we had. I I hate to because this always sounds like an excuse when a filmmaker says it, but or things that we had done intentionally, and it was like, okay, you didn't like that, but we did that on like not wearing costumes and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it's like we made the conscious choice. We're like, all right, some people
you intentionally
didn't
put clothes on that day.
Yeah, some people didn't like the fact that we weren't in like Jedi robes and whatever, but. that was not the overwhelming opinion, number one. Number two, it didn't seem to ruin the enjoyment of the people who it did, you know, stand out to. They were like, oh, it would have made it a little bit better if you'd put on costumes, and we're like, we don't agree with that. We don't think it would have. So we didn't change that, you know, and it was just little things like that where it was like, okay, I understand how it might. Some people might not like the choice we made, but it was a choice. It's not like we were just...
At least you're being consistent.
Yeah, it's not like we were just incompetent and like, oh, great, thanks for saying something.
You're
so
right,
this time
Jedi's
we can
do
it properly.
Wear robes.
It was a choice we made, so we made that choice again. And then other than that, it was just, you know, trying not to get too bogged down and, all right, we gotta, you know, do... It was just going at it with kind of the same mindset we had before of, all right, let's try and come up with the coolest thing we can and just make sure we're not being stupid and like occasionally second guess ourselves just to make sure we're making the right choices and stuff.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, we were concerned that it might suck and destroy everything, but
well, that's something I was curious about. I mean, it's got to be daunting at that point because now even if it's colloquially for people that don't really know what they're looking at when they look at a choreographed fight scene, you're sort of being thought of in their wee little YouTube brains as guys that are really good at lightsaber fights. And by this point in your life, you've done one.
Yeah, as far as they
that
knew.
That seems a little daunting when you look at it that way.
As far as they knew, we'd done one. But I think in large part, I mean, I was going to say, it's funny because I was going to say, well, you know, if it had just sucked, we would have just not released it or told anyone, but we totally did. We told them we were doing it, so that we could not have dodged out of.
We painted ourselves into a corner.
Yeah, we did. We did say, yeah, we're doing it, and blah blah blah, and so, so that was a little a little daunting,
you know,
like you say.
The whole thing is also that we tried to stay grounded about it, and we said, okay, why did people like the first one? This is not just us, you know, masturbating on camera. This is like we're really trying to figure out what made that work, why people liked it, and then sort of reinforce those things about this. And so I think that what was good is that we really weren't in a way we weren't thinking about all the people who we were making it for, you know, and I'm doing the quotation fingers, because we were really trying to please ourselves here. We were really trying to just outdo what we had done the last time, and
in your own paradigm of what you want to do.
Yeah, exactly. And so each of the things that we felt that we were really trying for and did pretty well at in the first one, which is like the choreography, you know, the cinematography, the editing, and the visual effects, you know, we try to do better in each and every one of those ways.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately we weren't doing it as we've almost harped on at this point, but I mean, we weren't doing it for a big audience the first time. Mm-hmm. We were doing it for a very small one, and ultimately we were just doing it for ourselves to make something we could be proud of. So that's what it came down to again. It was like, all right, being honest with ourselves, let's just make something that we can be proud of again. And then that seemed to work the first time, so hopefully it will work this time.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, along with all these other thoughts you're having, what theory did you come up with for why people did like RVD? I mean, it was for a series of movies that people hadn't liked in about 30 years and were starting to strongly dislike, what with the new things we're learning about the creator
of
the franchise.
I would disagree with that kind of characterization.
Because Star Wars is going out of style?
Because they had liked it for the last 30 years. That's why the prequels were such a big deal. And The Phantom Menace was a problem for a lot of those fans.
That is the most polite thing I've ever heard said about The Phantom Menace.
I don't know
Phantom
if
Menace
we're,
was a problem.
I don't know how much cussing we're allowed to do on this recording. So,
I like a problem. We'll stick with a problem.
Yeah. Anyway. But I don't think...
Well, was it a Star Wars factor that attracted them to the video, or was it...
I think
there's a built-in audience that are always going to be interested in that.
Yeah.
But what's kind of cool about us is we're not wearing the Jedi robes, like we were talking about earlier. We're not trying to sort of be one of those extension of the plots. But even those kinds of fan films, generally people are into, even if they didn't like the prequels, I think, because it's different people trying to play in that same universe and tell their own little stories. And a lot of people are really willing to sort of go along with you and play in that world. And what's one thing about us is that we're not even that far into the, you know, trying to be in the Star Wars universe.
Right.
I mean, we just have glowing laser swords that sound like lightsabers. And, you know, there's no denying that, well, yes, that's a Star Wars-inspired thing, clearly, obviously. Mm-hmm. But we are not, you know, trying to be some sort of plot that, oh, behind the scenes right. In the Star Wars
The effect
universe.
Of watching it doesn't work on a Star Wars level. It works on a... Sticks!
Right.
Well, fighting
and,
with sticks!
You know, and some of the comments that we get sometimes are people saying that, you know what, your fight was better than the whole movie. Because, well, clearly, I guess all they wanted was just a really cool lightsaber yeah. fight. And they really weren't interested in anything else, and we're giving them exactly that. And so I think for a lot of people, it resonated in that way, that we were, in some strange way, getting it more right.
There's a lot of freedom in that, and kind of, you know how to move forward after that point, I guess. Anyway, we'll be right back with Ryan Weber and Michael Scott and talk about the creation and the response of the sequel to Ryan vs. Dork. And we're back with Dorkman and Ryan, Michael Dorkman Scott and Ryan Weber, the creators of the lightsaber fight series RVD and RVD2, and maybe at some point RVD3.
Mm-hmm.
And we just finished talking about the creation, the motivation, and the sensation that was RVD.
Ooh, wow.
And a little bit about how you can
had that
follow
one in
up.
His pocket for a while, I'm guessing.
I know, I pulled that one out of my ass. It's next to my pocket, sir, but an entirely different purpose.
Well done.
And we were talking about, all right, how do you follow up a viral video hit with a sequel? Mm-hmm. And what it takes to put that together. And you were talking about how it's sort of liberating to know, at the end of the day, people just want to see us have a kick-ass fight. So, it's been 4 years since you've made the last lightsaber fight, and it's time to strap on the franchise title and try to do it again for the whole world to see. How do you begin that process?
Well, really at the end of the day, we were just trying to do the same thing better. I mean, for me at least, it was like there wasn't a whole lot of thought put toward exactly what direction we were going to go with. It's like, no, remember that thing we did 3 years ago?
Let's do that again. And the factory and the room and the cutting and the owl?
Yeah, let's do that now and better. Like what the best we can do right now. And so we just put a lot more concerted effort. We started like 3 or 4 months in advance just with the choreography and sort of conditioning as well. We were both taking kung fu classes to sort of be in shape and get all that cardio and be flexible and nimble and, you know,
is
be
there
sort
a
of
martial art that spinning lightsabers around is closely related to?
I'm sure it could be argued. I mean, everything
you could,
be.
You could argue most. I mean, and most people do. They you know, they say, oh, yeah, I did, you know.
Well, I recall that in the Phantom Menace conversations I'd heard at the time on the DVDs and interviews, Ray Park talking about how Darth Maul is basically a wushu guy. He's
yeah,
basically
sure.
just...
But that's Ray Park being trained in wushu, and so a lot of that comes through, you know.
And you guys yeah. being two nerds from the internet.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's the thing, is that...
Who've watched those movies.
I mean, what's funny about that is, you know, we did Ryan vs. Dorkman 1, neither of us having any martial arts experience or anything. That's just us making things up or, you know, looking at things in movies that we like and changing it a little bit or explicitly ripping it off in a couple of cases. But really, that's all just sort of us with sticks going, here, let's fight like this and just try to make a cool scene with no real expertise, you know, at the matter. And so a lot of people, you know, we'll get funny comments where people are like, oh, you guys used, you know, this, you know, martial arts form or this, you know, Jedi form.
Yeah, or
form
even
book.
Worse, yeah, they'll talk about like Makashi and all that stuff, which is an extended universe thing that they made
it's
up.
It's all in the books.
One of the video games or
right.
the games, right? They're like, yeah. oh, yeah, you use form two and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, that didn't exist until several years after we made this movie. I assure you that was not our inspiration.
Yeah.
But you know all about it now, clearly.
Oh, God. I know too much about those things. I know too much.
So when did you get together to film it? When, mm-hmm. when and where and how did that come about?
Right.
I mean,
so, yes.
You have a fan base now. Did that affect the proceedings at all?
Yeah, definitely. Because, yeah, you're absolutely right. And
we cared a little more, I think. But.
Oh, damn. We can't screw this up.
Yes. We did two things. We started to really sort of rely on our fan base out there and sort of reach out to them and see how sort of far along they were willing to go with us in a couple of ways. And so
they hiked up their skirts and pulled down their panties, bent right over and said, "Lightsaber me, Weber."
Wow. I'm going to have nightmares. But, okay, so we did two things. Number one was we said, we don't have a location. In the first one, that's my dad's where my dad worked at doing some industrial mechanic magic, and so that was a cool place that was just freely available to us. And for the second one, we needed a place to do it, and so what we did was we went online, and this is the part that's amazing, sort of about the internet, you know, landscape that we couldn't have done for the first one, I think, but you can do now. I mean, you can do it. Anyone can do it, which is to say, if you have something that people are interested in, which for us was the first Ryan vs. Dorkman, and then we said, hey, we're looking for a location. If anyone has a cool place to film, you know, let us know. We'd love to shoot there. And we got some responses back, and one of them was from a awesome dude named Ruben, who lives in Atlanta, Georgia, working, who's the owner of a tortilla factory, Los Amigos Tortillas, and sent us some pictures and stuff. We said, oh, that's really cool, and so he was would let us film there in the evenings. Basically, they work all day. We go in when they, you know, their shift ends, and then leave when their shift begins.
You know what incorrigible means?
Like incorrigible?
You can't learn anything from any example. See, you already met each other from the internet mm-hmm. 4 years ago and right. didn't die that time, but the next time a guy emails you from Atlanta, Georgia, and says you want to come to my factory,
uh-huh. Yeah, we show up, and then he's just there with a machete.
That, I'm just saying, it could have happened. He could have cut you into little round, flat things.
It's possible, but he was a big fan. Actually, he was really into it. And you know, it's funny because here we are and we live in Los Angeles, and it's like, well, why don't you just find a place to film out here? Everyone's doing it, and it's like, well, that's the problem. Everyone's doing it. Everyone knows what they're worth, and everyone wants to charge you an arm and a leg to shoot anywhere. You can't even put down a tripod in a public park without getting busted for permits or something.
They say when you come to LA, you're moving away from all the places to film and to all the actors.
Hey, that's great. Anyway, it was funnier because it was more cost effective for myself, Michael, and our friend Brandon, who is going to be helping us out, to fly cross country and shoot for free in Atlanta, Georgia, instead of actually filming somewhere locally.
And that you could just walk over to. You'd end up paying more for the park than mm-hmm. you would have to buy tickets in a hotel in Atlanta for half a week.
Absolutely, exactly. So
cool.
Anyway, so number one, yeah, that was our big sort of, you know, hey, fans, awesome. People who are on the internet who are just sort of into us is actually paying off in a way here and helping us to make the second one. And the other thing that we did is that we just we set up a little PayPal account and we opened up for donations. And we just said that, hey, if you like the first one and you'd like to support us in making the second one, you know, you can help us out with these expenses, like this airfare and
I can't imagine that turned out any money whatsoever.
Well, we actually did fairly well, and it covered a lot of that stuff quite nicely. And I mean, everything that we spent money on are things that we planned to spend money on. You know, that we were going to do whether people donated or not. It wasn't sort of hinged on that, but it helped, and it was great. And so, in addition to that, we also bought a new computer, a laptop, and a camera, because we were going to have to be out there. We wanted to shoot it and make it look really good, because we just shot it on a you know, consumer camera, the first one, and we really wanted to step it up and again make it better in every way. And so we shot it with a Panasonic HVX200, which is one of the first cameras, one of the sort of first prosumer cameras at the time that could shoot HD
and 24 frames per second.
And 24 frames per second, yes.
More cinematic kind of look.
And it's funny because since then, you know, I mean, that was like a rare find. That was a big deal that we got a camera that could do that. And nowadays it's really, people are sort of starting to get it. And
iPhone 4 has that.
Yeah. Does I don't it? Think it has 24.
No. I think it's HD.
But it is HD. It is 720p.
And
your phone can do that.
But the DSLRs, all the DSLRs now that shoot HD,
yeah.
A lot of them can do 24.
Yep. Canon 5D and 70 cool. series.
The 70 started, and then the 5D couldn't do it for a long time, but then they finally updated the firmware.
Firmware thing,
they finally caved because everyone was... Because they weren't going to do it.
Yeah.
They were going to leave the fight. They're like, no, if you want that, you can pay $3,000 more for the 1D or whatever, but then they came out with 7D and it could do it, and they're like, all right, well, now we're all just right,
fine.
Dicks. Yeah. And so then they put it in the 5D.
So 4 years have passed, and now you've got fans, and you've got confidence, and you've been laid multiple times by beautiful people, and you're putting together your second lightsaber fight for the internet to look at and critique viciously. I'm imagining that a bunch of the individual technical skills, visual effects, and it, to some extent the fighting and all the other things, and mm-hmm. what you can do with a stick and the way you can move a camera around, those things would have gotten better over 4 years.
Absolutely.
Was there anything that was harder the second time around?
I think it was only harder in the ways that we made it on ourselves.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, nothing was inherently more difficult. If anything, everything was inherently sort of more natural to us because we had done it before. We were just sort of better at it for whatever reason. But, you know, we were more ambitious about what we were doing from the start. And so, you know, obviously, for me, at least, and probably for both of us, you know, a lot of the hard part was later, after shooting it into the post-production, which we spent 6 months on doing all the visual effects for. And, you know, we were trying a lot more interesting stuff. We have a whole sequence in there where we're fighting up against a wall and we're slicing up this whole wall and all this.
That was one of the main things that we did think about early on. It was like, all right, what did we not do last time? And we looked back. And
that was kind of a viewer reaction thing.
Right.
You know, they're like, your sabers hit the ground, but you don't leave scorch marks or anything.
You don't use the environment.
Oh,
or
yeah,
like that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. RV2 is certainly the answer to that's, you don't ever screw with the environment.
That's true. I forgot about that because
you guys cut the hell out of that factory.
Yeah, because we have a little bit in the first one where we're rolling on the ground.
Right. And the sabers are bumping into the ground.
And the sabers are hitting the ground, but there's no marks left over, and it's like, well, that's because we didn't plan on that, and we're taking the sages and shut up. But
we didn't care that much, honestly.
We didn't care that much. When we were doing the second one, it's like, all right, it's fine. We'll address that with this one.
You're slicing open ladders, and you're scraping the hell out of walls, and you're tracking the scrapes onto the walls for the rest of the damn 10-minute short film.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a huge visual effects requirement load beyond making the sticks glow in RVD2.
Absolutely.
Why do you do this to yourself? What's wrong with you? And don't you just love the attention as it comes? Come on. Can't well enough be enough?
The first of those questions, the why am I doing this to myself, I did wonder many times as we were working
on
that.
You mazo son of a bitch.
Yeah, but, you know, again, it was the whole thing just trying to make something even cooler and even better, and you have to get more ambitious with those things, and we knew that people would sort of really respond to that and appreciate that, and they do. You know, people really like those aspects of it, that we really put that much work and effort into it, and again, it's not like we did it just to show off necessarily. I mean, in the end, we are for the whole thing basically, but we were always very conscious about trying to incorporate it into the choreography and make it sort of
cohesive.
You know, make it cohesive, make it a part of the sort of, and now we get to sound like kind of douchebags, but it's the character expression part of it, you know, and like each thing is like, well, who's winning, who's losing, who's more powerful, who's less powerful, and try to make it tell a bit of a story, you know, which is one thing that a lot of fight scenes don't really do. Even in real movies, they're not sometimes real great about that, which is that what makes a fight scene really entertaining, if you're going to make your own, is think about the characters and where they're each coming from and sort of let there be a plot to the fight. It's not just punch, 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 kick, kick, kick. It's, you know, you're telling a little story. There's a narrative in the choreography itself, and we were trying to be very conscious of that and let that naturally be a part of everything that we do, including the really extravagant things like, you know, carving up the whole scene that we're in.
Although we didn't go into it with the intention of doing that. A lot of the later on after the wall sequence, we just didn't really think about the wall.
That it's still there?
Yeah. So we just, I mean, so to an extent, I think that was kind of a good thing because we shot
it the way you would shoot it if it were real.
Yeah, we shot things the way you just shoot them if you weren't thinking about the visual effects, because we weren't. And then when we went to put things together and we were organizing it and figuring out what needed to be done in each shot, it was like, oh, we can totally see the wall right there, so we're going to have to deal with that.
Did it cross your mind? They won't notice.
No. We knew people would notice, and people would be scrutinizing and just looking at every little frame.
Every frame, yeah. We were like,
we had people who were doing that on our first one.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Right on. It's like they're going to go frame by frame, and we have to do as much as we can to get away with, you know, not having to deal with that too much. And even still, there are things that are
we still get
imperfect
criticisms on certain things. Yeah.
Now, the final piece of this, and I think this is really cool, when you see short films online, and if you watch a lot of them, and I've seen a lot of short films online, digitally created, thrown up on YouTube or Vimeo, and if they have original music, it's usually a guy playing his acoustic guitar, and it's recorded kind of nicely. Or if you want to hear something orchestral, you will. You'll hear the MIDI synth samples that have orchestral, but you can always tell the cheap MIDI trumpet sounds in the back of the orchestra, and it's got this very kind of brassy 1997 N64 game sound to it, which I notice isn't a texture of the music that I hear when I watch RVD 2.
No, it is not.
It sounds very much like a real orchestra playing at Capitol Records to me.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, it is.
My God, what the hell?
That was the sort of second phase of the fan involvement, because we were really surprised by the support that we were getting before the...
Parentheses,
the
money.
Parentheses. Yes, the money. Send us more money. And so as we were... And music is always a thing that we kind of don't think about when we're shooting. We don't make any deliberate decisions based on the way the music is going to work. We always let the music sort of happen after and reinforce what's happening on screen, and we don't think about that while we're on set. So, and our original intention was to do exactly that. It's just, oh, we'll get somebody to do it, and it'll be synth, and, you know, whatever. It'll be whatever it is, and that's fine. You know, we just probably, you know, we want it to flow and be a little more connected with what you're seeing on screen than if we just rip the soundtrack out of a movie, which is what we did with the first one.
Yeah, I'd done a short film based on the short story of the Monkey's Paw, and I connected with a composer for that, Gordy Habb, who is one of the two composers on RVD2. And so I basically, when we were going to go do this, I asked him if he would score it for us, because we wanted an original score, and he said yeah, and it was going to be a synth thing and all of that. And but then
how do you go from
changed,
that to
yeah.
What is right. A 60-piece orchestra?
I believe it was 60, wasn't it?
Is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
It'd be 40, around there, it was 40 like, or 60.
No, it was around like 57 or something. We just rounded up
right
to 60.
60,
yeah. So yeah.
So there were a lot of musicians sitting there playing your damn theme.
Well, the jump from there to there is that is the guys got really excited. Kyle and Gordy were really kind of like, you know, you guys should really think about, like, you know, for not that much money, you know, we can get a small orchestra going. We can record some real instruments, and it's going to help supplement the synth.
Right. And know? Kyle, just to go back, because I asked Gordy to do the score.
Right.
And then he saw the movie, and he was totally down with it. Like, after we had shot it,
yes.
I finally finished The Monkey's Paw, so I saw him again when we were working on that, and told him about the second one, and he wanted to do it. I showed it to him, and he was like, wow, this is a lot of music, because we had already done the stupid thing of like setting a release date and doing the whole thing by the time we talked about that. So
right.
So it was like, all right, we need this in 3 months. We need the music in 3 months. He's like, okay, I can do that, but I think it'll be easier if I bring in someone I've collaborated with before, which was Kyle Newmaster, and so that's why we have two composers on RVD.
And Kyle was just coming off of another fan film project, actually. What was it called? Do you remember?
I can't recall off the top of my head now.
But it was quite nice, and he did an orchestral score for that, and it sounded exactly like John Williams.
And he was the one who came in and was like, you know, it's not as expensive as you might think it is.
Yeah. So.
And so we started looking at that.
Do you know how it breaks down in terms of who was writing melodies and who was doing the ginormous job of arranging?
It was in sections. It was basically in sections. I could point out this section from here to here was basically the first draft was written by Kyle, and this section here to here was first draft written by Gordy, and
it was
swap them. And
it was actually rather organic, which was cool because they would each kind of see the other one's work and then kind of riff off that and use themes that were established in one of the other cues, but it turns into the same giant cue for this. But you know, for example, you know, if you've seen it or if you're watching it presently, like as an example, the part where we're under this dark grate and we're fighting in there, that was written by Kyle, and then sort of they hand off once we exit that area, and then it goes into Gordy's section, which is, you know, he did the part where we're fighting up against the wall and stuff. And so they kind of traded off. It goes one, then the other one, then the other, then the other, through to the end. And I think they each did about three.
I had absolutely no idea that's how it went down. That's very, very cool.
I think there's six sections in the movie, and they just handed them off one then the other. And
to quickly blaze through the rest of that is we started doing this, we committed to it, you know, and we said, okay, it's going to cost this much, and I'm like, okay, you know, well, cool. And so it's the same thing as the first one. We're going to do it this way no matter what. You know, this is what we're doing. And then we went online and we said, here's what we're doing with the score. We're going big. We want to make it really great, and here's what we're planning on doing. Here's who we have sort of attached to it, and here's some of their work, and check it out. And if you'd like to specifically support the soundtrack, you know, feel free to donate that to us. And the other offering all along was that we were going to give everyone a credit for their donation and say, these are all the people who financially supported us, because we couldn't, you know, they helped us out in such a big way. And so for those people specifically on the soundtrack, is they got their own sort of credits specifically for the soundtrack, and then also they got into the insert on we ended up making a little CD of the soundtrack, and then an interview with ourselves and Kyle and Gordy talking about making the soundtrack. And in the little sleeve, we got everybody's name on there, as well as all the people who performed on it as well. And so we got a lot of support with that as well, and it was really great, because then as that was happening, and we were saying, oh wow, we're kind of getting some real money for this. The people are really excited about the music aspect of this. And then Kyle and Gordy were going, oh, that's great. Okay, let's add a few more violinists. And they kept beefing up the number. And so, you know, originally it was going to be like 40 or something. And then by the time we got there, they're like even the day we showed up, and he's like, I'm like, wow, man, we got a lot. And he's like, yeah, we added like three more trumpets or something. It's like, okay, cool. Right on.
So living and working around Hollywood, you drive past Capitol Records all the time.
Absolutely, yes.
But you park in the parking lot inside the gated fence and you're walking in. Was it what you expected? I mean, it's one of the only damn landmarks Hollywood has. It's that little round stack of pancakes Capitol Records building.
It was really awesome, especially for me, because this is the part that we were kind of least involved with. You know, everything else we were doing ourselves. We were doing all the effects. We edited it. We performed it. We choreographed it. We, you know, we're very involved in the shooting style and everything like that. And this is the first thing that we kind of let these two people go, and we would just show up and see how it's going and give our notes, and then we just walked in on this day and didn't have any responsibility except to sit around and look up on a screen as our movie is playing and
grin
60
like
people
idiots.
And grin like idiots while 60 people play this retardedly epic soundtrack to our stupid lightsaber fight.
I think that really was probably my favorite part of the process, for exactly the reason you said. It's yep. Like I didn't really have to do anything here. They did all the heavy lifting.
I wrote a lot of checks as well.
I just got to show up and watch it happen, you know. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So another couple months of shooting pyro and putting together visual effects and color correcting and color matching and laying together the graphics titles and all that stuff. And all
the pyro was fun too. I also like that a lot as well.
Yes. To briefly just say what that was is all the, when you look at the fight scene, all the spark hits and the little bits of flame and things like that, they're all actual real elements that we filmed. None of it is digitally, you know, synthetically created. And what we did was we spent a couple of weekends with an awesome guy by the name of Bob Forward, who runs debtfilmshd.com, which provides you with just really cheap, inexpensive, but very cool, you know, little pyrotechnic elements just shot on black that you can easily composite into your own home movies and stuff like that, and it's really cool. And so we specifically shot a bunch of elements for the fight, and so we would, like, set up, you know, like, oh, if we slash, we have a shot where we slash through a box, so we get a big box and we paint it black, and we meticulously frame the shot exactly the way that we filmed it, and then set off all this pyrotechnic stuff that then just sits right into the shot, and it's very specifically, perfectly created for that, and it worked very well for us.
But that took more brain power than the score did.
Yes, so yes.
I still think the score.
But it was
my
still
favorite.
Fun to blow things.
But
up.
It was,
I mean,
still fun.
On.
The second that's
you blow
number
your nose
two.
And you have black boogers. It's a good day.
So you throw it on YouTube. The day arrives. What was the process of telling the world and showing the world? What went in what order?
The world already knew. The world was watching our website, because we were going to link to it through the website.
I mean, people had known for, the better part of
months.
A year
when
we were going to release it, and so everyone was waiting for it, and so...
You had a,
actually, you had
a premiere and an online thing. Were they at the same time?
No, they were staggered. What we did is we spent a little more money, and we rented out a theater, the Wilshire Fine Arts Theater, which is a really cool 400-seat theater that does a lot of indie films and things like that. You know, they'll do screenings for those kinds of things.
Here in the Valley?
Yeah. No, I don't know.
In
where
Hollywood.
Is it? It's Hollywood.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And so we rented the place out and told everybody, hey, if you want to be the first to see it, this is... And we played it there. The premiere was... was it the anniversary of the...
The release was the anniversary.
The release was
the
anniversary.
One.
This one was a few days before. It was like a week
that
before.
That was like a couple weeks, I think, mm-hmm. Like a week or two,
right. So the people who actually came out to our theater and hung out with us and saw it on the big screen in HD and everything, they were the first to see it, and went mostly well.
Yeah.
I understand there was at least one little hiccup.
And
it makes you guys sound like assholes, so tell us more.
Yeah, we'd basically run a little, because we rented it for 2 hours, and we had, like, it was a 10-minute thing, right? So,
we made a whole little event out of it.
Yeah, we made a thing out of it. We showed other fan films.
Other lightsaber fights that we
specifically.
Really liked.
We had a little, festival, and then and then we'd show RVD 1, and then the plan was to show RVD 2. And then what eventually wound up happening was that I was in charge of the laptop and the whole thing, but
it's my fault.
It is. It totally is, because I'd stayed up the entire night before.
Yeah, we both had
finishing. Yeah.
We were working on the sound all the way up.
Yeah,
the end
and it still wasn't. I mean, for that, it still wasn't done entirely for the premiere. It was just done enough.
Yeah, exactly.
To be acceptable, to show to, you know, a world premiere little audience. In packing up, I forgot to put the power cable for the laptop in the laptop bag. So
the whole show on a battery?
We ran the whole show on a battery, and it was only when we went to play the movie.
We got through all these other films. We played like 8 other films. What did you do? 5, 6, 7, 8.
Yeah.
Then we showed Ryan vs. Dorkman 1, and then we started playing Ryan vs. Dorkman 2.
Right before we started playing it, it was like, yeah, I'm going to shut down in about 3 minutes, okay? Like, the little warning on the laptop. It's like, I'm running out of battery, so I'm just going to shut down in a minute. So it's like, oh, no.
Play.
Yeah, so we just, because we were going to do a whole intro and build it up and, like, just kind of tease them for a little while. But then it was like, oh, no, we have to go right now. So we played it and had our fingers crossed. Like, just let us get to the end.
How were their reactions?
We don't have
going
to do the credits. They loved it. They were enjoying
really
it.
Into it.
The vibe was really, really great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then
right before the final build up?
Yeah, right before the final confrontation,
and
it froze and turned off. Which actually, if it had to happen,
it was actually a good perfect
point to
people
do it.
Were really calling bullshit on us and saying you did that on purpose.
Yeah, because it was the perfect moment for it to happen. But because we were sitting there like, just please, just let it stop before it ruins the ending.
Yeah.
Like, don't let it stop right when the, you know, something big happens right at the end.
I like how you're trying to avoid spoilers.
I don't know why. I'm just used to that.
4 years old now.
Yeah, but fortunately. It stopped when it did,
right.
And then we just kind of vamped for a while.
Yeah,
and then
went up in front of everybody and just said, hey, so here's what happens.
Yeah,
and
so
eventually one of the people that was there to watch the movie went out to the Apple Store and bought you a cord just to watch it.
And brought it back, and we were able to finish it.
That's
great. Just enough time. I mean, we were asking the guy, and it's like, hey, we're out of time, but can we just play it? And he's like, yes, play it.
Yeah.
That's great. That's awesome.
And everybody was
And then
thrilled.
A couple weeks later, it was on YouTube. This is 4 years ago. What's happened since then? It's 5 million views.
Well, it's just over 3 years ago, 3.5, I would say.
We should say that it's been very well received, and again, overwhelmingly positive comments on YouTube and everything like that, and people really liked it, and you know,
I almost never see negative comments on it,
yeah.
And that's honestly, I mean, considering the internet, it's like you would think we would get we would at least get trolled more often than that. Like, even if they didn't think it sucked, there's just people out there who will say
that. You get that usual 2% dislike instead of the like, but there's not a lot of people who actually post and say this sucks.
Yeah,
you guys are idiots.
Do you have any idea how many views it has off the top of your head?
I think main post has just
a little over 6 million.
Oh, it's up to 6 now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah.
And you've got multiple versions. You've also got content from the DVD. Tell me about the DVD set and the music and all the things that were after it came out, throwing people's way.
Mm-hmm. One thing that we were very aware of as we were going is that people might be interested in how we make this low budget, you know, internet phenomenon. And so, thank you. And so. We're filming everything from the very beginning, and so we filmed ourselves, all the choreography, and we filmed every aspect of when we were actually, you know, when we were filming the fight. We had an extra, usually whoever was not actually doing something would be running this behind the scenes camera, just filming whatever we were doing, and so we had tons and tons of material of all of that, of our pyro shoot, of our music session, recording our percussion, which was a whole different thing from the music, and even the premiere. And so we've got footage of all of that.
So
stuff.
We can actually watch the failure that
you
is
can
the premiere.
Watch
you
the
can.
Failure.
You can.
And
so you put together like a behind the scenes doc.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm personally really into those like really deep long behind the scenes.
But your movie was seven minutes long credits.
Yeah.
How long is the behind the scenes?
Actually,
doc?
I think that's with credits.
No, it's 10
minutes.
It's 10
with
credits.
Without,
okay. 7 without.
How long is your doc?
Well, we have our DVD is 5 hours of content.
Oh my god!
Because you know what? If you're going to spend money on our DVD, we're going to give you
And it's a handsome DVD, great case, great menus.
Oh, well, thank you.
You get the you get both movies, right?
Yeah, well, we the thing is again, the legality is you can't sell a fan film. And so what we do
the movies are freely available. They are. You can get them, you can download the DVD and burn it yourself, the ISO file and stuff like that.
Yeah, we have it all online.
So we give it to you as a convenience, but you don't have to buy the DVD,
behind the scenes to get it.
But what you're buying is the behind the scenes DVD, and that's how we kind of skirt the legality of it. And Lucasfilm knows we're doing it. We know that they know we're doing it, and they're like, whatever.
They're fine or don't care.
Didn't George Lucas see it?
Presumably, it was released for the it was entered in the
Atom films.
Atom films. Oh, it became Atom that year, but the Atom fan film competition,
which is the most official sort of Star Wars fan film.
Yeah, and we won the award for best visual effects.
Mm-hmm.
And we know as part of the thing, every film that won some category,
LucasArts,
would be viewed by George Lucas, and then he would pick his favorite out of those. So we didn't get the George Lucas select, but based on those parameters, yes, he has certainly seen RVD2.
Mm-hmm. We've got 2 minutes left here in this, what is it, 7.5 year long journey that's been RVD2 and visual effects for the internet.
Mm-hmm.
What have you guys gone on to do? What are you doing these days, Michael?
Well, right now I don't want to necessarily admit to this, but I'm working in some 3D conversions. What I've been doing lately.
So you're the problem.
Yeah, exactly. I'm always afraid that like someone like Brad Pitt in Inglourious Bastards is going to be like, someday you'll be able to take off this uniform, but I want people to know it was you.
So you take a 2D movie and make it
into a 3D things in my
movie?
Forehead. Yes, yes.
You make a 2D movie work for 3D goggles.
I try as much as possible. I haven't worked for any of the... I haven't worked on the larger, more... famous failures like Clash of the Titans or recently The Last Airbender, but the ones that I have worked on, some of them haven't released yet, so we'll see how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan?
And me, I've done pretty well for myself. Again, you know, I had been pursuing visual effects actively from a very young age, and so since then, I've actually since just around the time I think doing RVD2, I forget. Yeah, I hadn't been before. I've been working at a place called Stargate Digital doing visual effects for a lot of big TV shows that you probably heard of. And
you won a couple Emmys. Come on, you can say it.
And I've won a couple Emmys actually in the interim.
Awesome. And you guys also appeared, it's funny to mention real fast,
in
a Weezer video with a bunch of other famous YouTube people.
Pork and Beans.
Pork and Beans. Go watch that.
Yeah,
they won a Grammy for that, so technically we have won a Grammy as well. So there you go.
Go to YouTube, type in Pork and Beans, watch the video. Go to RyanVsDorkman.com, watch 1 and 2. Buy the DVD. It's an amazingly in-depth, behind-the-scenes look at how you put together the visual effects for your own short films. And until next time, I'd like to thank you guys for sitting here and chatting with us.
Thank you.
Ryan and Michael.
Absolutely, yeah.
My name is T. Christie. I hope you guys enjoy the convention, and maybe you're awake by now. So long, guys.
Must have followed you to that cafe. Stood in line, and when you raised your arm to pay, above your skirt, beneath your shirt, in the light of day, your tattoo angel gotta come take me away. Do you still search your heart for passions? Do you still throw your cares aside and sing? The drugs you use are numbing you, so don't ask how you feel or what you need, but who? I know you're hurt, but still you flirt, that's how I knew. Your tattoo angel gonna fly just like she flew. And we will search these hearts for passions. And we will throw these cares aside and sing. I've nothing to do, just want to be so carefree. We got wings. away for just a night or two, to play the music, have a glass and sing off tune. Lift your shirt, take off your skirt, and in the new, it's a tattoo angel in a sky so dark and new. And we will search these hearts for passions. We will throw these cares aside and sing. I've nothing to do, I just wanna be so carefree.